This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hi, this is Mary Grady for AvWeb. Today I'm talking to John Langford. He is the CEO of Aurora Flight Sciences. Today he's at the Uber Elevate conference in Dallas, where he's one of the industry partners who signed on to create VTOL aircraft for urban transport by 2020. Hi, John. I know it's a busy schedule there, so let's jump right in. Tell me about your airplane and your involvement with Uber and what's going to happen now.
So, as you know, Aurora has been working on electric-powered vertical takeoff and landing for some time. Most of our work has been for DARPA and the Department of Defense on this high-performance XV-24 Lightning Strike that we're developing. When the commercial application began to emerge about a year ago, we decided to try to take some of the technology that was coming out of the XV-24 and other programs that we work on and apply it to this commercial civil mission, which Uber is interested as the next step in urban air mobility. So we basically took the X-24 design, and which is really optimized around speed. The X-24 is trying to be faster than the V-22, and took out all the high-speed features, really focused on simplicity and reliability and low cost, the kinds of things that would be needed in the civil mission. And what we came up with is the design that we showed off yesterday, which is a two-person, electric-powered, fully autonomous vehicle that has a number of little lift rotors that lifts you up vertically, and then a propeller in the back that drives the vehicle forward. It has a wing, and so the transition between the vertical part and the horizontal part is probably the big technical trick in this. And so we went ahead and built a development model, a quarter-scale version of the airplane, to test that out and prove that it worked before we went too far with the concept. So that's what we showed yesterday.
Oh, okay. Now you intend this aircraft to be fully autonomous from the get-go, right? You're not just working toward that.
Correct. The first flights will probably have pilots on board, but they will be operating pretty much exactly the same system that a normal passenger would be. It's just that they'll have access to more of the software directly, so that they will be able to monitor more things on the airplane and probably change more things. It'll all be through keyboards and touchpads. There's no stick in this airplane. There's no wires that go out to control surfaces and stuff. But the early flights will have a pilot on board, both for the FAA certification category, because that makes it a manned airplane, also because it's a faster way to get the thing fully developed. And then when it goes into eventual operation, the idea is that there would be fully automatic, like the little tram cars you get on at airports or Disney World or something like that.
Oh, okay. So do you intend, is your intention then to have a full-scale aircraft flying by 2020?
Yeah, the goal on this is to put some number of developmental airplanes out there. The agreement calls for, I think it's between 5 and 50, so that you could start sort of demonstration operations. You know, this Dubai, it's sort of a world's fair. I think it has there's a more modern name for it than that. But the something like that, where you could be using this in a controlled environment, but not yet fully certified for general public operation. We think having it fully certified by 2020 is a pretty tall order. But having a system that could be demonstrated with trained participants in it, we think that's very possible.
Oh, okay. Now, what are you thinking about for sort of safety protocols on these? Are they going to have BRS chutes, or how are they going to handle things like weather and birds and things like that in that kind of environment?
Right. Let's take those in order. The parachutes, that's an interesting question. Our approach is that you need to make the system, you know, reliable to the same standards that people expect out of commercial aviation today, 10 to the 9th kind of reliability. When you do that, we don't think you need a parachute on the airplane. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be one, because, you know, there's some public acceptance surveys and things like that that say people feel more comfortable with that, which, you know, that I won't rule out that there would be a BRS type chute on the airplane, particularly maybe on for the early operations. We don't believe it's necessary. We don't believe it's needed. If you're going to have to rely on it, your airplane is not ready for prime time. But we certainly understand that consumer acceptance also plays a role in that, and we'll be working with the end customer for things like that. For the operational parts that you mentioned, weather and collision avoidance. So weather, you know, it's going to be like all aviation, right? There will be days when you can't fly. This morning, severe thunderstorms rolled through here in Dallas, and for a period of about 2 hours, they probably closed DFW. I don't know that for sure, but the system will have the same kind of constraints that other aviation does. That in severe weather, you'll have to work around severe weather. Beyond that, we expect it to be a very versatile system that will be up a very high percentage of the time. I don't think people will accept it otherwise, right? Because if they're going to depend on it, it has to be reliable. I do think the places like Dallas and Dubai, the first two places that Uber has rolled out, are pretty good places to start with the test. They're by and large they're large cities, generally flat terrain, generally good weather. I think they're going to be great places to kind of start the trials in.
Okay.
And then I guess the last question was about birds and collision avoidance. So, you know, another one of the programs that Aurora has been working on is called ACUS, which uses scanning laser systems to map the ground and allow the airplane to basically automatically choose a safe landing site. And we anticipate that in some scenarios, these airplanes will be fitted with that kind of scanning laser system so that it gives it sort of perception awareness if it has to be down navigating among buildings, for example, in sort of urban canyons. It will need a system like that to make sure that it avoids, you know, fixed objects. A lot of that can be done by just having a map of what's going on, but you'll still need active systems, and that's coming out of our ACUS program. For the collision avoidance, it'll be a combination of onboard sensors, the same sensors that detect buildings and stuff, will be focused on being able to detect wires and probably birds and that. You know, the airplane is pretty slow, and particularly when it's in hover, we're not particularly worried about a bird strike as it's taking off and landing, because the conditions that stress bird strike for big airplanes are the airplanes are going hundreds of miles an hour. That's why they shoot a bird at the windshield out of a cannon. It's not because the bird is going hundreds of miles an hour, it's because the airplane is going hundreds of miles an hour. And there certainly are a lot of, you know, helicopter issues as they fly at high speed. So we will have to handle that issue once we're up away in cruise. We anticipate doing that with the target approaches, these scanning laser systems, with some probably some short-range radars. You know, we're doing a program for a little quad rotors that has used a combination of visual sensors, acoustic sensors, ultrasonic, and now we're working with a Japanese company on a little 24 gigahertz radar, so that these airplanes will have, you know, the ability to look around them probably close to 360 degrees, but at the very least 180 degrees, the way, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of cars do already. The question will be how far out they have to be able to look, and that's going to be a function of, well, what, how fast are you moving, and what targets are you worried about. They'll have ADS-B, so they'll be, you know, to the normal air traffic control system, they will be totally visible. It's not that they're that there's nobody watching with what's going on. There will be a central, I'll call it a ground station, but a central operations center, a network operations center, that will be watching and controlling every vehicle, not in the sense of, you know, there's pilots sitting around like in Nevada flying Predators, but in the sense that there will be people knowing where every vehicle is, authorizing, knowing the health of every vehicle, where it's about to go, you know, authorizing the takeoffs, monitoring the flights, approving the landings, all of that sort of thing. and they'll be in touch with the air traffic controllers. So the air traffic controllers will be talking to the network center. The network center will be, controlling the airplanes, sending commands to the airplanes, and the airplanes will be to an air traffic control center, to the FAA. They're going to respond just like any other helicopter would. The other thing is that, as in the Uber concept, most of this is pre-planned routes, especially at the beginning. That in the early days, these aren't just going to go from anywhere to anywhere, which is a more complicated air traffic control problem. These things will be, it's envisioned that they'll be going along pre-planned routes, and probably what will happen is while the network is up, we anticipate that the air traffic control will essentially authorize the clear column, and these vehicles will move in between it, and everybody else will be told, stay out of that column. So at least that's how we envision it working today.
Okay, so what do you see as the major obstacles or challenges, I guess, to make this happen? I mean, by 2020 seems really ambitious. Do you think that's doable, and what will you have to overcome to get there?
Well, I think it's very doable for demonstration systems, right? To have vehicles that can do this on, the scale of a demonstration system with 50 airplanes or something like that, that's very, 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 very doable. It means that a lot of groups have to move together and move out fairly quickly on this. It's not going to be a cheap thing to do. It's not going to be incredibly expensive on the scale of aviation things, but we are certainly talking hundreds of millions of dollars of investment that are going to have to go into to get to that point. I think as long as I think things like the event here today that Uber is staging, which really begins to get people going, wow, this really is possible. I think that's really the most important thing. It kind of has to change the mindset from this is a cartoon thing that is somewhere out in the indeterminate future to, oh, we're really going to do this, and it will be it's in the near term thing. So it's a little bit like going to Mars, right? I mean, going to Mars is certainly possible. It's always 20 years away,
right,
and the problem is if you don't set a specific challenge that is close enough for people to go, yeah, that's going to happen not just in my lifetime, but in my tenure on my current job kind of thing, then people don't really take it seriously. And I think that's what that's how I look at the 2020 kind of milestone, is that it's certainly doable for that. The certification, again, we're not prepared to say these things can be certified by the FAA or other traffic authorities for normal category use in that period. Obviously, they'll all have FAA tickets. They'll have special airworthiness certificates during their test stages. But the field has really come a long way just in the last couple of years. The FAA test sites, we already fly airplanes with no one in them in the national airspace under FAA control. That's been done. That's not a new thing. Now they don't have commercial paying passengers on them yet. And these won't either in the first instantiations. But our belief is that once they get up and running and people see it, then people will go, that is really neat, and I would really like to. I'd be willing to not just take a ride on one, but use it on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Okay. Thank you for your interest.